Hi everyone, I'm David. I support Gen X Grown Up on Patreon, and you should too. Don't you want to keep this great content coming? So you know what to do. Go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon and just do it.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listeners, to this episode 125 of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. I'm John. Joining me, as always, of course, is Mo.
Hey, everybody.
Of course, it wouldn't be a show without George. Hey, George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Wow.
Whoa, I'm awake.
In this episode, we return to the skies and the screen with Captain Pete Maverick Mitchell. Check out some hardware to improve your home computer workstation for work or play, and play an action RPG where you are a man-eating shark on the prowl for revenge.
Okay, yeah, I want to hear that, because what kind of revenge does a shark need?
Well, you'd be surprised.
That's the tease. You'll be excited to find out. We have those topics and many more coming your way in this episode. Before we jump into that, though, it is time for my favorite part of the show, and that is fourth listener email. We received an email just the other day from a recent new patron, Vern, who we actually announced a couple episodes ago. Yeah, so thank you, Vern. Vern wrote in. The subject line of his email was escape room.
Oh. Ooh. Wow.
Okay. Which, by the way, still getting lots of views from almost 2 years ago.
Well, it's brilliant. I mean, come on.
Views? Did we do a TV show when I wasn't looking? It's getting views or listens?
It's getting listens.
It's getting listens.
If you watch the waveform, you view it. I said, no, that's not what they're doing. Listens. Yes, stickler. Yes, they're listens.
I'm the stickler, Mr. Grammar Nazi. Wow.
It's my turn. Yeah, my turn.
George has a point.
Okay. Yeah, so Vern wrote in talking about escape room. Here's what he had to say. Greetings, fellow Gen X grownups. I've been listening for a while. This is my first email. Thank you, Vern.
Cool.
I was born in 1970. I'm retiring in June after more than 31 years in the U.S. Navy.
Wow. Thank you, sir. Yeah, appreciate the service.
Indeed. I grew up in Tampa, Florida, but I've spent most of my career, other than boot camp and trade schools, stationed in Southern California.
Okay.
Transplant. He goes on to say, I am a Gen X grown up. I only wish I had the bankroll that you all seem to have for all the toys and gadgets. But it's still fun getting your reviews so I can narrow it down in order to buy the few things I can afford.
Yeah, no, we're all broke.
So, yeah.
It's all an illusion. Yeah. Well, we're broke because we buy all these damn toys. That's why we're broke. Frankly, and some of the toys we get are thanks to supporters like Vern, who supports us over on Patreon to help us afford to review these things. So it's because of you, Vern, that we can do what we do. He says, I'm writing in today about Escape Room.
Whoa.
But that was our fictional podcast with about four episodes back in, I want to say it was 2019, 2020. I forget when that was. What was that? 2021?
Pre-COVID.
It was pre-COVID. Oh my God, it was. Yeah. Anyway, but yes, so he listened to that and he said, I found it and listened to it all in a day, thanks to my long commute to and from work. Excellent podcast. I was hooked.
Okay.
The one little bit of criticism I have, which we'll take constructive criticism,
of course.
I know this is going to sound funny coming from a sailor, but I feel like the F-bomb was dropped way too much and it took away from the story at times.
Fuck this email. Jesus Christ.
That was the most predictable response ever that I could have expected from George.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably accurate with how many we would do in that situation. But I see what he's saying.
Was F-laden. Yeah, for sure.
I think I had like 13 in a row when my hands got burnt on the joysticks.
You did have that.
Yes.
It was a high fuck density going on right there.
I was going for the Guinness record, but they never showed up. So
they didn't answer your call?
No, I didn't get the plaque or anything.
No. Vern says, as much as Rachel pleaded with me to share the podcast, it was hard thinking of someone that could handle all the fucks.
Okay, fair enough.
In the Navy, surely.
Right. Don't you know some sailors? Come on. They're not going to blush. but he enjoyed the show. Again, he just, that was his one criticism. We love, you know what? Criticism helps us to build forward and know what things people like and don't like. So yeah, we appreciate you, Vern, for letting us know. He says, now that I'm retiring, I hope to get into podcasting myself. Don't do it. Don't do it. It's a lot of work, Vern.
No.
Yeah. Especially don't let John talk you into doing it.
Right.
Well, that'll go great. But anybody else? No. He says, by the way, I would love to be the on-air fourth listener if you ever need a lifetime in the military experience or point of view for any sort of discussion.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right. We will keep that in our hip pocket. We'll know that you are available. Thank you. He wraps it up just saying, I love your show, Vern. Yeah. Cool. Thank you, Vern. Awesome. Yep.
I'm thinking about like how to get rid of all the fucks in there. Like if we bleeped it, I think it would just sound like a comedy reel.
If we like, bleeped it, it would just be one long beep. That would be it.
My hands burn.
And every now and then in between those would be like share and subscribe. That's it.
Well, Bandit was kind of like a found footage kind of thing. It's supposed to be gritty and raw and unedited. And so that, yeah. And you can tell George did a lot of the writing because George says fuck more than any of us. So
well, that's well, hold on. I think Mo wrote that episode.
I said a lot of the writing. A lot of it.
I might have been channeling George a little bit, though.
You might have been.
Getting George's headspace. I mean, and that's all right.
I'm not saying I didn't appreciate the writing. I loved it. I thought it was eloquent, but still.
Vern, again, thank you so much for writing in. We love it every time the fourth listener takes time out of their day to hit us up. Let us know what they like and don't like and suggestions for the future. Hey, if you would like your email featured here on the show, it's easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We'll read every single email. And most of them, like Vern's, eventually make the show. All right. With that good business behind us, it's time to jump into the body of episode 125. Stick around.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7 Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
You're about to see the MeTV, the Sony Watchman. It's the SheTV, the Luigi TV, the first truly personal TV, the Sleepy TV, just over an inch thick, or is it thin? And one even has an AM/FM radio, the Referee TV, the Sony Watchman TV, the one and only TV for the one and only...
See your authorized Bay Area Sony dealer.
We're going to get going as we always do here, talking about media we have been enjoying between last time we spoke and now. And in fact, last time we spoke, George, you were going to talk about Stranger Things, and yet none of us had actually seen Stranger Things due to other cool things popping up. So I'm curious now, George, what have you been watching this time around?
So I've been watching everything but Stranger Things. No, I'm just kidding. I've watched Stranger Things.
Okay.
I was a bit surprised because I had read some stuff online where they said that we were going to get like 5 episodes in this batch. And then later on in the summer, we're going to get like 4 more.
Something
but
like
we
that,
got
yeah.
7 okay. in this batch. Which threw me for a very happy loop.
Yeah, that's true.
I was very happy to have more content. I don't think from watching this first batch, though, that this series can go much past that next season. Like, this is season 4, so... Because the kids are getting a little long in the tooth. Their age is starting to kind of creep up on them through no fault of their own. But
life has a way of doing it.
Cut it out, brats. Quit aging.
Quit growing. I really enjoyed how they picked up the story from the end of season 3.
Yeah.
I thought they did a really nice job of showing us a lot of different aspects. And I'm kind of combining all the episodes into one synopsis here because it kind of feels that way to me. Like, even though it's episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, so it just feels like one big long story every time I watch a new episode with Stranger Things. I think they did a really solid job of picking up all these different storylines because there's like 4, I think, maybe 5 different storylines going on that are solid, active, could be main storylines. Mm-hmm. And they're giving them all good service.
Yeah.
And reverberations from last season they're dealing with too.
Yeah. I'd say I really enjoyed watching the first half of this season, I guess, whatever you want to call it, because I feel like they did it, all the stuff is coming together, you know, and I'm very happy to see that. Like, I'm like, I was watching, I'm like, oh, makes sense. But mm-hmm. when you talk about them getting long in the tooth, though, you know, my girlfriend actually went back and accidentally watched set season one, episode one. You know how, like, if you leave Netflix on, it sort of cycles.
Oh, right. Oh, right. Right. Yeah.
And she was saying, like, oh, my God, those kids were so small. I'm yeah. thinking, I'm like, yeah, that's, yep. yeah.
You know, I really appreciate, I think I still have one or two left to see in this, was it season four, volume one, whatever they're calling this batch.
Yeah. Something along that lines.
So often you'll see series like this introduce new characters and then new characters. Doctor Who next season around, but the new characters they folded into the season, into the show, have really somehow they've become important and in the front and not diminished the screen time for the other characters. I'm thinking particularly of Max, who was just added, I think, last season because she was the brother of Billy. And, and then, of course, all the shit happens with Billy and you figure, oh, well, they're going to move away or something. No, she's part of the friend group, but they're kind of on the outs and they're in high school and dealing with the problems of being in high school and not kids anymore. They're trying to be cool. And to your point, the other thing I was thinking, George, when you were just talking about how they're getting much older, I heard a rumor that season five, they're going to do a time jump. So they might actually be playing up, like maybe they're playing older than they actually are next time around.
It's not hard to see. I mean, there's a time jump in this volume right now in the first half of season four. And we often talk, especially when we're talking about shows that do the whole start the episode in one time period and then go backwards to tell the story until it gets back to that point. ER was famous for doing that. Castle, another TV show that did that a lot. Star Trek, John, used to do that crap all the time.
They were
And everybody calls it a writer's crutch, like start in the middle of the story, then jump back and tell a story, and that builds suspense and drama and whatnot. What they've done with this one, though, that I appreciated a little bit more, it's not starting in the middle of a story. They're telling the backstory, especially of Eleven. And I really, really appreciate the Eleven's backstory now, because we're getting to see what went on with her in the lab.
Just
in
before we met her.
Right. Just before we met her.
Yeah, and that was cool.
John, you haven't seen all of them, so I don't want to spoil anything, but Mo and I understand there's some very pivotal character work in those history segments that they're showing us that I think you've probably figured it out, but if you haven't, you will very soon in episode 6 and 7. I like the fact that the Upside Down has its own, I'm not going to say government, but its own hierarchy. And they're talking about that in these episodes, you know, like the Mind Flayer is the big boss and this guy worked for him and that thing worked for him. And so it's kind of like all this stuff. And John, I wish you'd seen episode 6 and 7 because there's some really some fun stuff that's happened in there.
They're awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you're a fan of Stranger Things, you absolutely will enjoy the season. I can't see you being disappointed. If you haven't watched Stranger Things, now's the time. Go back and start with season one, like Mo's girlfriend accidentally did, and watch all the way through, which will be a super fun experience. It'll be a long one because you know, these episodes now in this season are like hour and 10, hour 20.
But there's payoff. It's not like you start a series and you're like, well, I hope it continues. Now you know, not only is the story continue, we're going to get a nice finale coming with the remainder four and five. So it's worth your time investment.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, speaking of time jumps and payoffs and historical.
Good lead in. Nice. Good segue.
Storylines. John, I know you've been, you went and watched something that I've still haven't gotten a chance to see, but I think everybody's looking forward to it.
I'm just going
to
take just a moment here and say that when we started this podcast nearly 5 years ago, George had not even listened to a podcast. Now listen to him like a segue generating masterclass. Yes, absolutely. We had a backtrack just a couple of weeks ago talking about the original Top Gun. From 1986, and we had, I think it was 86, right? And Top Gun Maverick was finally, after the delays with COVID and other delays that they had on their own, finally coming out in the theaters. We were all looking forward to it. I know that, Mo, you've seen it. I had a chance to see it.
Yes.
George, we're not going to spoil anything for you.
There's jets, though.
Right. There are jets. There are things we're going to tell you that aren't spoilers.
Fair enough. Good.
Right. Tom Cruise is in it. All right. Yes. That's not a spoiler. Jets are in it. This film has gotten so much good press, and for my money, it is all deserved.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I agree.
So in its opening weekend, it did over $100 million at the box office domestic, which already was Tom Cruise's biggest opening weekend.
Really?
Believe it or not.
Bigger than his Mission Impossibles? Or,
yep. Yeah. And now they're like up over $300 million. They were number one for two consecutive weeks with almost no film has done since the pandemic. I think maybe Spider-Man
almost
did.
No film has done in the modern era, really. I mean, how many films?
Yeah.
Like when we were younger, that's something we never talk about. But when we were younger, films would stay number one for like 6-7 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Now
they would lock down a theater
a week and a half. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I got to drive to the next county because these theaters are still showing the same crap from 5 weeks ago. Right. Yeah. To speak in the abstract, there are things that I really enjoy about this. If you liked Top Gun, I think you're going to love this film. It might be a film.
Absolutely.
It might be a sequel that it's better than the original in a lot of ways, but it would not be better if not for the quality of the first film. You know, stand on its own, but so much more powerful if you have the history of the first film. And it feels in many ways like an 80s movie. The structure of the movie, the character progression, the expected. He's basically a bad cop where they ought to take his badge and gun because he's, you saw in the trailer, I didn't expect an invitation back. They're called orders, Maverick, right? Right. He's still Maverick. He's still the guy who's so full of himself because honestly, it's kind of earned. He is the guy that he is.
Yeah.
I don't know how to heap praise on it. It's not like any film I've seen recently, even the Ghostbusters, which was a definite modern take on Ghostbusters in Afterlife. It was good, but it wasn't a throwback movie. It was a modern movie.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And somehow Top Gun Maverick to me, if you watch the first 4 minutes of it, you might think you're watching the first one because it starts with the same theme and then Danger Zone kicks in and your jet's on a tarmac and
you're
all
on
that.
An aircraft carrier, all that stuff.
Yeah. But it just feels so much like what you would want out of a sequel and maybe more.
I totally agree. I had a great time seeing this movie. I mean, that was one thing. I just enjoyed watching it. You know,
hell yeah.
I just had fun watching this movie. And they somehow managed to not make it hokey, which I thought for sure was going to happen. Because I'm like, how are they going to contrive a follow-up story to this?
Mm-hmm.
That's what was going through my head when I saw it. But the story, I'm like, okay. You know, I mean, I was able just to go with it. It didn't feel weird. It felt, you know, it felt like a continuation. It actually did feel like this is a story that happened 30-something years later or whatever, 20-something years later, whatever it is. And it just seems like it fit into the same mold as the first movie. I mean, it really felt like a really amazing sequel.
Well, it's logical. Where would this guy be?
Right.
I mean, not a spoiler, you find out in the opening scenes, he's a test pilot now for the Navy. He flies experimental aircraft because he's the kind of guy that can actually, you know, push the limits of a vehicle and find out. Perfect for him, right?
And they probably don't mind if he dies.
Right.
Because he's
no
Maverick.
Skin off the Navy's nose. Good riddance, that guy. He's a real pain in the ass. Right. Yeah. The character beats are in there. It is very 80s in that it's a very clear-cut enemy who you actually never really see their faces. It's just bad guys. Right. In modern times, it's not so simple as, hey, if we can eliminate this target, the bad guy is gone. Well, in modern times, evil is pervasive and it's underground and it's guerrilla tactics and it's terrorism. This film was a bad guys are at this place. If we do this one thing, we've saved everybody. Go, guys. And it's such a clean black and white. We're the good guys. They're the bad guys. Let's find a way to work together kind of film like Top Gun was. And George, I envy you that you still have it coming because you have all the surprises and the positive there. But know that you have nothing but good ahead of you when you finally see it.
Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. The way you guys describe it, there's something to be said for a film that just is entertaining. Doesn't have to be thought-provoking. It doesn't have to be controversial. Doesn't have to be some new horizon that no filmmaker has ever breached before. It's okay to just do a fun, entertaining, hour and a half long film.
With a good story, too.
This seems like the throwback to the summers of high school when I was young.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely looking forward to it. It almost makes me want to restart my A-list subscription.
Almost.
Well, you know, you have your A-list scale. I would put this one squarely in the pay the full price.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have A-list.
I would too.
It's worth seeing on a big screen if you can. Worth getting in the nice, you know, Dolby surround, whatever you have, if you can. Because it's fun. You talked about that aerial photography was something, George, you wanted to see in a sequel.
Is a
man,
lot
is it there? Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, space. Yeah.
So Maverick, definitely worth checking out, especially if you're a listener of this podcast and a fan of that kind of Gen X era culture. Mo, what about you? What have you been checking out, man?
So I just finished, the first few episodes of the new season of The Boys on Amazon Prime.
The bad guy superheroes.
George, I don't know if you kind of know, you're a big comic book guy. I'm sure you read the comics and stuff, but they somehow managed to make a story that was already pretty violent and gory more violent and gory.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. All right. That's something they do well. So they lean into it.
There's a couple scenes that you're just like, whoa. I mean, like, what brain came up with that, you know, as a thing that could happen? And I just watched it, you know, which is even worse. Overall, though, I mean, the story, I still enjoy it. I mean, the acting in it is amazing. It's basically continuing the story. I said, I'm just really enjoying it. I think it's a really good, so far, third season start.
Yeah. Before we dig a little deeper into it, in case someone hasn't seen The Boys, just a real brief synopsis of what the series is about.
So just imagine a world with superheroes, like kind of like DC comic-ish kind of thing,
right?
Except more realistic, I guess. Like, if a Superman character existed in the world, what would prevent him from being an asshole? Right. You know, what can anyone do about it? And basically, the superheroes are almost like celebrities. So they have all these people kind of looking out for them, covering up for them when they screw up and all that stuff. And the boys are a group of people who were all screwed over by superheroes at some point, and they're sort of getting payback in a way, I guess that's one way of putting it.
Good description. Yep.
All the same actors are there from the original. It's a great story. It's not for everybody, though. Like I said, when I say gory and this thing is gory, violent, and disturbing, quite honestly. Some of the scenes are very, very disturbing, but it is a good story. And if you're into that stuff, if you like comic book stuff, you know, especially the darker comic book kind of things, this is definitely a great show to watch.
I think I stopped. I watched all the first season. I remember that. I never picked up the second season, not for any particular reason. Yeah. We talked about just first a superhero fatigue, which this doesn't quite fit into because that's kind of the dark mirror of it. But there's so much good stuff on. So you said if you're watching three, you probably watch two. Is it worth going back and picking up and watching two to get into three?
I thought two was a great season also, I thought.
Really? Okay.
I thought two was a great one. And this one, like I said, it's just picking up right from there. I wouldn't recommend watching three without watching two.
Okay.
Because the story definitely continues. And you need to, you'll be lost if you skip a season. But yeah, I said I enjoy it. I think you definitely just worth watching.
So what's the time commitment then, Mo? Because like I'm kind of in the boat with John. I think I might even have like one or two episodes left of season one. How many episodes were in season two, if you know, and how many were in season three?
I don't know how many were in season two. I'm going to say eight episodes. I'm guessing, though. Okay. I'm not sure.
Like a moderate season, not the heavy, heavy commitment.
And season three just started, and they're doing the week-by-week releases. So they're only up to episode three right now.
Oh, okay.
Well, George, if you just cut back on the Law and Order repeats, you'd have plenty of spare time to watch that if you wanted to. That's not going to happen.
Well, no. I've even added the ER repeats into the rotation now.
Oh, geez. Oh no.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, 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 cut.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on CannedAirPodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show, too. It helps more than you know.
Diet Coke, Diet Coke.
Here's important news. Now Diet Coke and caffeine-free Diet Coke have NutraSweet, the new breakthrough sweetener for even more real cola taste.
Real cola taste with just one calorie. Living good with Diet Coke.
Now Diet Coke has NutraSweet.
Diet Coke.
I'm thinking about changing the name of this segment from Tech and Toys to Tech and Toys and Tools, because we seem to be adding in utilities and stuff, which is fine, which is totally cool.
Just fantastic. I picked up several.
And actually, to kick us off is a utility, right, George?
Yeah, I mean, sort of. So it's called LunaPic, and it's essentially an online web browser-based photo editor. So for our people out there who want to do some light photo editing but don't necessarily want to download something to your computer, or certainly don't want to pay for like one of the Adobe products or whatever, this is just a straight photo editor tool. The reason why I wanted to talk a little bit about it is because it does one thing in particular that I'm really, really pissed that it's not a part of all the other photo editors out there, because I can see now that it's possible.
What's that?
So one of the things I do for our podcast and our YouTube channel is creating thumbnails, especially for the podcast, right? And oftentimes we have these things in the segment that the only place I can get an image of it is like from Amazon or the logo of a game or something, but they sure. have really difficult to deal with backgrounds. Now, I have mm-hmm. GIMP that I can use, which you can pick and do this saturization process that can get rid of the background, you know, but you have to, it's very fine tool that you have to use. So you have to be very careful with your mouse movements and everything.
Right. And GIMP by itself is not an easy tool to use.
Yeah. Really. Or you can do the tried and true method of bitmap editing. You can just take an eraser tool and
draw
around the little item that you want to keep.
Yeah. With the odds of not messing that up.
Oh my God. Trust me. I've spent hours doing some of these thumbnails that are super small. And I'm like, I don't want to spend all this time doing this one little thing. Anyway, LunaPic just erases the background, period. Done. End of story. With one button click.
Wow. I mean, does it well too?
It does it well. Wow. Absolutely. That's what surprised me. So I took just an image of one of my biopics that we use when we give to conventions and whatnot. And in the pic, it's me in the foreground. And then behind me on my wall are like the wall is blue and I've got all my little posters and little toys and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff in the background. I loaded my photo onto it, clicked remove background. It did a little meter across the screen, and maybe 20 seconds later, it was just me. Now, granted, that's the ugliest way to test the tool, but still, it worked.
Wow. Is it a free tool? Do you have to pay for
it? It's completely free.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah. And then I assume you can take that image once you've cut it out and export that as an image with a transparent background and use it in some other application?
Absolutely. As anything you want. It supports all the image formats, PNG, including that TIFF, new one, John, that's going around that WebP.
The WebP,
It supports all the image formats, which is another really nice feature. Mm-hmm. As I've gotten more and more into finding these little tools and web pages and plugins and things that help me with my day-to-day computer life, I've gone down several rabbit holes. So I've got like a list of these things for the next 20 episodes at this point, if we need it. But I do appreciate that there's a much larger world out there than I understood for these types of tools, because I was just, you know, like, okay, it's GIMP or it's Photoshop or it's this. And I, you know, didn't really think about any of the other stuff, you know, PaintShop Pro and not all the standards.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of these up and coming smaller tools and services that are kicking their ass in a lot of these fields.
I would have assumed that a free online version would not be as feature rich.
Right.
And it may not be as feature rich, but in the features you actually need, it sounds like it's outperforming.
Right.
Exactly. Like there's no reason why, now having seen this on a web-based platform, that any of the others couldn't have already done this.
Yeah. Get your shit together.
They
Come on.
Just weren't making the effort. And that's what it is. I mean, so, you know, maybe one of them will buy LunaPic and add the process into their platform.
And ruin it.
and ruin it, more likely.
That's probably.
Yeah.
It's good for removing backgrounds, but John, you have something you want to talk about that's awesome to display really cool backgrounds.
Yeah, I do. I don't know when I picked this up. It actually was something. I had a gift card that I got from my job for X number of years there. And they said, thanks, here's a gift card. And it's one of those things where you go to an online site and you spend points for and I think I got like a little GoPro camera. And I got the thing I want to talk about for this episode that I just unboxed and started using for the first time in the last week or so. So, and I think maybe, Mo, you might have mentioned at one point you got a super widescreen monitor. Yes. It might have even been curved. Was that true?
It was curved. Yeah, it was curved.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a curved monitor and the first one I have ever had. This is a Dell 27-inch curved gaming monitor. I picked it up. I didn't pay for it. I have since looked it up and I have a link that, of course, I'll provide to Mo. They run about $250, $260
Yeah, that's about right.
For a gaming monitor, which doesn't sound outrageous. And especially having actually started using it now, I can tell you it doesn't feel outrageous for that cost for it. But it was my first experience with a curved monitor. And I had some assumptions that this Dell actually crushed for me, that I was assuming things that I would have a problem with. So I was concerned, hey, a curved monitor, what's it going to look like in terms of, you know, going to get glare in weird places? Because all my life I'm accustomed to a flat screen in front of me.
Right.
Well, I've learned, first of all, not a big deal, because they knew that was a possibility. And it has that like super anti-reflective coating on it that you really, in fact, I used it to shoot a video the other day. I just took a camera and pointed the camera at the monitor. Not only was there not that weird like refresh rate rolling or odd thing you might see when you shoot a monitor with a camera, because it has a ludicrous refresh rate that's just, you know, beyond my camera. But also, it was like super rich and clear and clean, something I never experienced shooting a monitor with a camera because it's a gaming monitor. And the thing I hadn't anticipated with a nice large one like this, as you turn your head to look at a monitor like this, things don't get further away on the edges. Everything is the same distance from you. So it's actually this natural kind of flow as you turn your head from side to side. I'd never considered that, hey, the edge of my monitor is another 2 or 3 inches further from me. So you're old, you got old eyes, you put on the reading glasses, and the monitor's a little too far away. Now I turn, I take off the reading glasses because it's too far away. And it really helps for an older guy like me, being a Gen Xer, being that's what we talk about. A curved monitor can help with lots of things. And that was one of my never anticipated. Yeah.
So now I have a curved monitor. And one thing that also surprised me is that it's not like a drastic curve, right? True. It's kind of, it's a very gentle. Is that the same with yours?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't take a protractor to it, but it's subtle. It's subtle.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of curious because you're talking about the curve and the high speed refresh and the gaming aesthetics and everything. I think Mo as well have something at our stations that you don't have in your man cave, John, and that's dual monitors. You have the giant, like 700-inch TV that you've got everything hooked up to.
Oh, come on. Don't exaggerate. It's only 600.
Not being a dual monitor guy in your everyday chair driving experience.
Yeah.
Are dual monitors, are they a thing with curved monitors, or would you rather just have one big curved monitor that goes across the width of your desk? Because I'm kind of maybe interested in swapping over if it works, that and along with the dual monitors, you get to move your windows around, feels a little bit easier because, you know, just expand it. Boom. It's on that monitor. Boom. This one's on that monitor. How would that work for you, if at all?
Well, I don't have two of them, but I can extrapolate from what I know. I used to be a multi-monitor person in my all the time. And ever since COVID hit and I'm working from home, I sit in the same place and I do work on that giant TV, as you said. But this curved monitor, once you start using it, any curved monitor, I would expect, the fact that it's curved kind of blends into the background. You don't notice it after a while. There's just like the same focal depth that I talked about is nice. Multiple ones would be fine. What you don't want is to put them flat and make a W, right? You don't want to have a curve and a point and a curve and a point. If you have a couple of curved, you're going to have to take and set them so that they're kind of touching flat on the edges, which means you need more real estate because the edges of them will come out further closer to you than if you had flat monitors.
Yeah.
So they'll take up a little more space because they don't sit, you know, flush up against something, but they're just as capable, you know, changing, moving stuff around on the screen and that kind of thing is just as transparent. I've been using a single one and it looks great and behaves great. It kind of blends into the background that it's curved, I think.
Yeah. And actually, George, I bought a second curved monitor.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I should have shut up and let Mo say it. He's already done it.
So because you know, a bunch of points. So I said, oh, I'm going to buy some second monitor. And you're right, John, exactly what you said. It's like, you just kind of line them up. So it's one long curve, essentially, instead of like a W and I sit right in the middle and it's perfect. It's fine. It works really well.
So one of the things I'm curious about then, now that you said that, Mo, is how defined is the curve? Like, does it come around like the edges of the monitors are like side windows in a car now?
No, not that bad.
So it's a very subtle curve.
It's very subtle. I mean, like, I'm just looking at my situation, like maybe the center of the monitor is maybe an inch away from the back of the desk. And then when I get to the edge, it's maybe 4 inches, 3 or 4 inches total.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And what about the part where John said, like, your eyes, like, because I have that same problem. You look to your left, and especially needing old man glasses and stuff now these days, something to the left is further away than the thing in the middle. Does it still feel comfortable?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as long as you position them correctly, like John said, like make it one smooth curve, which you can easily do. I just sit in the middle and everything just works the same.
Well, I think I just added $600 to my buy list. Now, sounds like.
Well, you know, imagine, George, the curvature. Imagine if you tied a string to your nose and held it out about 2 feet and then move your head left and right. That would create a slight curve. That's about the curve of this monitor. It's not a big bow.
It's just a little
indent that keeps the center and the edges the same distance from you as you turn your head. Mm-hmm. It's something I enjoyed. I didn't pay for it myself. I was happy to get it for free. I've been using it in my studio. I used it to shoot a video the other day. And I think I'm on board with curved monitors from now on. They're great if you have space for them.
Yeah. Awesome.
Now, Mo, you also have something that very well may change the way somebody uses their workspace and for productivity, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like a lot of us, I have multiple computers that do different things. You know, some of them are video servers and my Unraid system I have and all that stuff. And so I was using AnyDesk to kind of bounce around to get into them and do stuff. And I still do a little bit. But every now and then, AnyDesk would lose connection. It wasn't often, but every now and then it would happen. And then it's like, oh, crap. Let me see if I can find a monitor. Or I'd have to shut it down, just assuming that it was fine, and just to restart it. And then AnyDesk would work, and I'd get back into it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'm going to just get a simple KVM. And so my requirements was actually pretty simple. All I was looking for was something that could connect to three computers and could do USB and had HDMI outs. That was pretty much all I was looking for. And I didn't have to have the auto switch. I'm fine pushing a button manually if I have to. That doesn't bother me. So I found one on Amazon, of course. It's an HDMI 2.0 KVM switch it's called StreetTech. It's some generic
random rebundling manufacturer company.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. But it does exactly what I need, which I can't. That's all I could ask for.
Yeah.
You hook up your keyboard and mouse to it. It also has additional output, so you can connect USB from those computers into that as well. But
oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So if you have like a printer or something like that, everybody can use it, kind of thing. But yeah, for me, I didn't really care about that too much. And then it has HDMI outs to the different computers, and you hit a button, and then be able to bounce between them like very, very easily. So I have one monitor kind of set up there for those computers only.
Right. Right.
And I got a inexpensive keyboard, mouse, small. I got a little smaller one because of space constraints. And it works. What can I say? I mean, it just works and it works well.
Yeah, there you go.
So I got a couple of questions for you, Mo, because I've talked about the one I gotten a long time ago on the podcast, I'm sure. The one I got was well over $100, and it was a two-in, so two computers go into it, and two out, so I could have my dual monitor set up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't.
Now, yours is a four-in with one out, so you can only use one monitor, right?
Exactly. Only one monitor.
Mm-hmm. What I want to know is, how long have you had it and been using it? Because my two-in-two lasted 2 months, maybe three.
Oh, really? Oh no, it died?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Just, not all the way dead, but would
not right.
When you would switch from one PC to the other, maybe one monitor wouldn't come up, or maybe the mouse would stop working, And it was, of course, out of the Amazon return window. So,
of course. Yeah. That was planned.
I think worse than broken tech is unreliable tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, just break so I can throw you away, please.
So, how long have you been using yours, Mo? And
I've only had this one a couple weeks.
Okay.
So it's not long.
So maybe in a couple of months, then come back.
I'll let you know. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was $60.
Well, see, and that's the other thing. I went to your link and it was $60. And again, this pisses me off because John, you remember, and Mo, I'm sure did this as well. Back when we had our computers back in the day, or TVs or VCRs or anything, you had that physical selector switch kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
A ka-chunk, to B, ka-chunk. Right?
Yeah.
When I was pulling out all that Amiga stuff, I found one of those selector switches.
Yeah. And it probably had a big dial, didn't it? It was like a click dial.
That was a hard wire.
Those things never break. Why is it that these things make themselves so goddamn complicated that they can't even
and
do
so
what
expensive.
They say?
Yeah.
Right. And so expensive. It's ridiculous. They don't need to be a computer themselves to go, okay, here's HDMI USB. Okay, now HDMI USB is over here.
Yeah.
Seems stupid to me, but it's the world we live in.
It ought to just be throwing like the big Frankenstein switch, like the big lever on the wall. That's all you really need, right?
I don't know. This one seems as basic as you can get these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty simple as far as putting it together. Like you said, so far so good, but I'll definitely, remind me in a couple months. I'll let you know if it's still working or if it breaks, I'll be sure to let you know.
Cool. Fair enough.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
Even though Hewlett-Packard technology has produced a number of firsts, some of you still don't know who we are. Or maybe now you will. Introducing the touchscreen personal computer, the Hewlett-Packard 150. By merely touching the screen, you can find an address, move a paragraph, change a forecast, Make a chart with just your finger. Now nothing stands between you and what you can become. Hewlett-Packard Personal Computers, setting you free.
This is the main event of the podcast. For the three in attendance locally and the millions listening around the world, ladies and gentlemen, it's time!
Gentlemen, time to talk all about games. Mm-hmm. I want to start the segment because I have kind of an unusual game topic to talk about this time. And since it's my segment, nobody gets to tell me I can't talk about it. So,
well, we can say it. We just know you won't stop.
Right, it won't stop you.
I just keep talking. It don't matter. Now, John may edit it out later and you just hear me pitching to the next person, but...
And hey, goodbye, everybody.
And here's the game segment. Take it away, John. No. So recently we all attended a convention here in Tallahassee where I live called InfinityCon. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a convention mm-hmm. that I have known the owner and showrunner David for several years, ever since he did one, I guess it was 7 years ago, 8 years ago, where he had all the Battlestar Galactica 2003 actors at the convention. So this year, David asked me to participate in running the convention with him. Mm-hmm. My particular area was to take care of the panels at the convention. One of the other things that developed during our conversations leading up to the convention was David's idea of wanting to have an area called Gamageddon, which was supposed to encompass all types of gaming, essentially. So mm-hmm. he had some virtual reality stuff in there. He had some console gaming in there. We were supposed to have some pinball and arcade, but that gentleman got sick, I believe, with COVID. And so ended up not being able to participate. But the one thing that David hadn't really thought about or didn't know how to do it was a tabletop gaming area.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, the three of us, we have been to SFGE for a number of years now, and I think we all agree they have one of the best tabletop gaming library experiences of the conventions we've been to.
Best I've seen, certainly. Yeah.
So having that experience, I suggested to David, hey, maybe you should do it in a similar fashion. Mm-hmm. The difficulty, as you can imagine with any of those, is where do you get the games? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I reached out to SFGE, and turns out that library, it's actually theirs. They own all of those games. They have paid for all those games.
That's hundreds of titles.
They have like 1,000, I think, at the convention, they told me.
Sounds right. I didn't know that.
So it was like a little daunting because I was hoping they could just come down or send whoever it was, or I could meet a vendor or something like that. It didn't work out that way. So David and I stopped talking about it. Then about 2 weeks before the convention, he started talking about the tabletop gaming area. And then it dawned on me, I've got a guy here at Gen X Grown Up in the Discord server, Thanos. Those of you who have been a part of our Discord server or been a part of the live streams or any of that, you'll recognize that name. He's one of our top supporters. He's always participating in things. Mm-hmm. John and Mo worked with him at John's company.
Yeah, in a previous life. Yeah. Known for a long time.
And he's a super nice guy, very helpful. Mm-hmm. So while we were at this meeting, I said, well, let me call my guy and ask his opinion. So I called Thanos up and said, hey, Thanos, you want to be a tabletop gaming guy at my convention in 2 weeks? And he went, sure.
Awesome. That sounds like Thanos, yeah.
Right. We talked a little bit about it on the phone of what to do and everything. And over the next week, we made some plans. Basically, what we were going to do is Thanos was going to bring up games that he felt comfortable bringing up from his personal library. I was going to do the same for mine. Mm-hmm. And we were just going to let everybody play very small little library. At the same time, Thanos also started reaching out to a couple of the game production companies that he is an ambassador for, like Stonemaier Games. Through them, he found that Stonemaier, however you say them, they had put this Google Sheets form out there that anybody who's running a convention can fill out the details of the convention, and other game companies, other publishers can see your information and get in touch with you and send you free games.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
It's very cool, right? It helps them with advertising because most of them are smaller publishers. Mm-hmm, you know, they're not Milton Bradley or Parker Brothers or whoever. So he showed me the spreadsheet. I filled our stuff out. And there was another part of the spreadsheet that said, okay, here's some publishers that are also willing to let you contact them. So okay. I reached out to a few of them. Mm-hmm. Next thing I knew, I have boxes upon boxes showing up at my house of all these tabletop games.
Nice.
Of all board games.
Yeah. Whole bunch of tabletop board games. They were sending me duplicates for the play and win stuff, which was awesome.
Dang. That's really nice.
Wow.
Then Thanos drove up, stayed the weekend here in Tallahassee, and ran the tabletop gaming area.
Yeah, did an excellent job.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was going to bring up. So I just wanted to use my time in this segment to thank Thanos for doing that for the convention and for me personally, and also for doing just an awesome damn job. I talked to a lot of people at the convention, and all of the people who I talked to that went and played tabletop games, they all sang his praises of how he explained the games when they were checking them out, made the process easy for them, kept track of everything. Everybody seemed to really like it.
Yeah, that was the thing. He was a board game ambassador. He wasn't just taking IDs. I was there a couple of times because, you know, it was a friend. We'd go hang out with him a little bit, and I would see someone come up and they pick up a game and go, "Hey there." And he wasn't like inserting himself. He's like, "Would you like me to show you how it plays or give you a run through, or we just want to give it a shot? Or if you have any questions, you can come ask me. What would you like to do?" And off the top of his head, he could tell you the rules for any of those games you a tutorial and walkthrough, and he did on many occasions. So it surprised me that InfinityCon attendees were appreciative of that, because it was about the best you could hope for someone running a section like
that.
And I'd say in the Gamageddon area that we had, it was the part that I thought seemed to be the most successful, even though it was the last minute throw-in thing from 2 weeks. You know, we had 60 odd board games there between the ones that got sent to us, plus what Thanos had and what I had. And I saw people after about 2 o'clock on the first day, because the convention opened at 10. So after about 1 or 2 o'clock, I started noticing just a constant steady stream of people walking up to him and or people sitting at the tables playing a game.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it just makes sense, because it's a way to keep people engaged in your con, but they could take a break.
Yeah.
They can sit down, relax. Yep. They're still doing con stuff, you know, meeting people too, probably, because a lot of these things, you know, you kind of need more people to play a game. When I see cons that don't have those, I'm like wondering, like, why not?
You know, I think you're right, Mo. And there's some things that David and I talked about for next year to help support Thanos a little bit more, like having those little table stands that have the, "Hey, need players" sign on it, or the, "Do you want to learn about X game?" You know, those kinds of things, so that way we can have a little bit more interaction and a little bit more opportunities for the people. We'll actually have a sign this time, so people will know it's there.
I mean, it was doing well without a sign, so that says something, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Word of mouth was carrying them in.
So I was very, very happy and felt very fortunate to have known Thanos through Gen X Grown Up and been able to put these things together for the convention and for Thanos, because I know he enjoyed it as well. We talked several times. It was a good fit.
Great fit. Yeah.
So, yeah, awesome. Lots of fun. But
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I want to move on now so that John can get his edit in and cut all of that out for later. And we'll move into John. You had something. I know you wanted to talk about this before, but it got delayed. And so I think now it's come out and you want to talk about it. I'm hoping, at least. Is that right?
That's right. Right. And so for the edit, and now the first topic of the game segment. So I have been covering and enjoying and playing the Atari has been putting out these reimagined versions of their classic arcade games called the Recharge series. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've talked about what was it? Centipede and Asteroids and Missile Command and Black Widow. I don't know. Tons of games.
Yeah.
So they just keep putting out these reimagined versions, and Atari is turning 50 years old this year. So they're really kind of ramping it up. The most recent one is a game that I played very, very little, but turned out to be a very, very good game. So there is a full color vector game called Gravatar, which you may or may not remember from the arcades.
Oh, absolutely. I do.
Have you put any quarters in Gravatar? Do you remember it very well?
I mean, if you describe it, maybe, but
So there's some planets around. They have some scores on them. You fly your little asteroids type ship to it. It zooms in. It's a little bit Lunar Lander-y, where you have to work your way down through a cavern to shoot some stuff or detonate a bomb, and you have to get out, and then you destroy that planet. And you just go from planet to planet to do
that. Sounds like Asteroids combined with Scrabble. Or scramble, rather.
Kind of scrambly in that way, right? But it's not like pushing you like a forced scrolling. You're just exploring an environment, this cavern. Okay. It's not scrolling to the side.
Yeah. Actually, my arcade, my one-up cabinet Tempest has Gravitar on it.
Oh, have it on there. Ah, so it has Gravitar there. Okay, so you know Gravitar.
So it's kind of like Lunar Lander, except you're shooting.
It's a bit like Lunar Lander, yeah.
Was it a vector graphic game? Or
It always was.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Okay,
vector.
All right.
But color vector graphics.
Yes, right. Yeah. Yes.
Like Tempest is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gravitar was never one of my favorite games, but I remembered it quite well. And so, they did Black Widow, which was not a hugely popular Atari game, but it was an arcade title they had. I wasn't expecting a lot out of Gravitar Recharge, but it came out. It's $9.99. I'm excited for them. I picked it up, put Atari on it, and I'm probably going to buy it. That's the problem. It's a disease that I have. But pleasantly surprised sounds rude. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be bad. I was just expecting it to be another one of those, because it's been very formulaic, the other releases. You know, they kind of make it kind of neon. They put a grid behind it, add some power-ups. That's what they've done with the Recharge series so far. Gravitar Recharged is, for me, so much better. This didn't have to be a recharged version of Gravitar, though it clearly borrows much of the game design from them. This feels less like an arcade title and more like an expansive exploration game. You can take your time. You have limited fuel for kind of thrusters, but the idea is there's a giant screen that you can't see all of, but these planets are in orbit around this sun. Okay. And you fly your little triangle asteroid ship until you get close to a planet and you zoom in on that planet, and there's an objective. You either have to kill all the enemies or collect all the widgets or detonate a bomb and get out in time. There's something different to do in each level, and it tells you at the top of the screen, but you could take your time. It's very exploratory, and sometimes there's these tight little caverns you have to kind of wind your way down through, and is that inertia of kind of being in space, but you're on planets, so there's varying degrees of gravity. Sometimes the gravity is above and below you. If you go too high, there's a cavern above you, or sometimes you're in a space station where there's no gravity, so the Gravitar comes into play because gravity is different from place to place.
Nice.
It is so much more of a game than just, hey, let's take asteroids and add power-ups. Hey, let's take Centipede and add power-ups. This is one that I have already, I paid full price for it, $10. I have already easily played it more than 10 hours. It is much fun as just to pick up and play. Now, it's still arcade-based. You're still trying to get your highest score possible. They fixed so many things I've complained about. So like, oh, you just have one ship. Well, not anymore. You can pick when you start your game, one ship, two ships, or three ships. If you pick fewer ships, you get a score multiplier at the end of the game. What about power-ups? Do you want them or not?
Okay.
If you decline them, there's a score multiplier at the end of the game. So you get a bonus for playing a harder game, or you can leave all those things on and have a more fun experience that's not so punishing. It's a little more forgiving.
Okay.
So good.
So, I mean, I played the original on the arcade 1-Up, and I remember playing it as a kid. The thing that got me about it is it wasn't an easy game to play. And I think that's why it turned off a lot of people, because it was challenging. It wasn't one you could master easily, and you said a variety. So is this one, it sounds like this one's more fun, which is something I think was missing from the original.
So I think the fun is there. It's that it's not as difficult to crush your fun is what it is.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. It's definitely more forgiving. So you have a larger screen. It's not a vector based. I mean, it's more raster looking. It looks more like a planet or a cavern or whatever you're flying in. Kind of atmospheric. The music changes from planet to planet. And if you finish all the planets, you warp to a whole new solar system and you're doing a whole new set of planets with different puzzles to solve. There's a lot in it to do. It's not rinse and repeat. It's not Breakout 20 times and add power-ups. There's a lot more to it.
It almost seems kind of side-scrollery. Not in the bad way.
But it's not. It's open exploration. You go any direction that you want and find it.
So
I'm working on a review. If I get it done, of course, it'll be available on our YouTube channel. But Gravitar Recharged, if you've been looking at these and they weren't quite for you, this one is a little bit different flavor. You might like it.
Nice.
Mo, how about you? What have you been playing?
So this is a game I've seen it on like Steam and Epic and those places forever. It's one of those games that you look at it, you're like, it interests you and then, you know, that kind of thing, but you're not really sure. Like you don't never want to pull the trigger on it. Because one is expensive. It was like a $40 game. And so on Epic, if you have the Epic game system on your your PC, it's actually free right now.
Okay.
So I grabbed it. I was like, oh, I remember this one. And I started playing it. It's called Maneater. This is going to sound weird. You play a shark in an open world. It's an open world environment. And there's actually a story behind this.
So now I understand the revenge aspect of the teaser.
Because
the shark wants revenge against Hall & Oates for that shitty video that we talked about on our backtrack.
Maneater? No. It's not that Maneater. It's a different Maneater.
Oh, okay.
Not the Hall & Oates Maneater. Though that would make a great game, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The shark only comes out at night.
Okay, terrible. That's a bad song, not a good game. What are you doing?
I know. So the game starts off, you actually start off as an adult shark because that's how they teach you the game mechanics, you know, because okay. the adult shark can do everything. And you're going there and actually you have fun. You can eat people. You can eat fish. Eating people is a lot more fun than you'd think it would be, especially when there's people trying to hunt sharks and you get to eat them too. And, you know, you get break, destroy Same. Boats. It's very Jaws-like, right? And then the story ends that basically as a shark, you get captured by a shark hunter. And as he's cutting it open, it has a baby inside that's you. He throws you in the water. So you're now trying
so you're
to get
revenging
revenge.
For killing your father, mother shark
apparently.
Thingy.
Right. And so you start off as this tiny shark in the Louisiana, like kind of a bayou sort of area. So the small fish around you, and you have to be careful. Like you can't go after like huge things because you're a small shark. Mm-hmm. And there's gators in there that you have to fight because they will come after you and stuff like that. Nope. And as you get better and better, you have power-ups that you could add to your shark. You could give him different colors. You give him – he gets more nutrition off – because that's how he heals by eating, which mm-hmm. is a shark, right? Makes sense.
Yeah.
So you get damaged. You eat some fish. You're better. And they added just these like funny little things. Like you could smack things with your tail. You could do the whole jump out of the water thing and do flips if you want to. But I have to say one thing that got me is that the scenes are actually really gorgeous that you're swimming through. They're really well done, which surprised me. You know, I thought they kind of would skimp on that, but they haven't. It was actually a really, really pretty looking game and it's kind of fun to play.
So I just got one question.
Yeah.
Does Dr. Evil finally get his shark with freaking laser beams in this
game?
I'm
hoping.
Is that one of the add-ons or power-ups?
I haven't gotten there yet. I just started. I'm just now just an adolescent shark as opposed to a baby shark. So, but I'm hoping lasers would be part of it. You do get sonar, which is not a normal shark thing.
That would be the best achievement, Dr. Evil achievement. Get freaking laser beams.
Freaking laser beams.
You know, now that you said that, if they don't have it, I will be disappointed.
Missed opportunity.
Because now you got that in my head and that's, I want that. Now I have to have that.
You can laser the bad guys, laser the fish, and just eat the remains. That sounds fun.
Oh my god, that'd be awesome. You know, laser the other shark hunters.
The lasers work underwater. Can you do that? I don't
know. Yeah, of course.
Hey, in the game, it could
exactly.
Well, of course, in the game,
you can jump out of the water and laser something if you have to, but anyway, I don't care how, but perfect. It's got to work. So, yeah, I'm gonna look for that. But if you happen, if it's still on the Epic system, if you can still get to it, it's free. And I looked on Steam and they're still charging $40 for it. If you have the opportunity to do it, you know, I would say absolutely grab this game. I mean, if nothing else, it's fun just to be a shark for a while and be the apex predator.
You just have a Jaws fantasy and you want to be the bad guy.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
yeah. Sometimes you just want to swim around and eat people. Maybe that's what you're looking for.
You know, yeah.
Science, science, science. Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes... Yes! Mm. Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
Well, moms and dads the world around give their kids the same old sound. Gotta go to school, be a big success. They wouldn't settle for anything less. Now they've learned whatever you seek, you'll help yourself to reach your peak in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. Need a trade? Looking for a skill? They have hundreds to fit the bill in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. Want more school? Don't have the bread. They'll help pay to get you ahead. Talking Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. Mom and dad, they'll want to shout. He's made it big, there's no doubt. Thanks, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. It's a great place to start.
As we round out the back end of this show, you may know we'd like to take just a second here to talk about the other things we are looking at or looking forward to between now and the next time we have an opportunity to sit down together and record. And George, I would like to start with you this time. What do you have on the horizon?
First thing is sleep. So that, okay. That last InfinityCon really worn me out. I didn't realize how much work really goes on behind the scenes until I was doing it.
Yeah, and you were busy.
I think I walked back and forth across that arena like 100 times, maybe maybe 200. I'm more. Not sure.
Did you get your steps in? What'd your phone say?
I got mine and everybody else's steps in. Second thing I'm looking forward to is the NBA Finals. My Boston Celtics are in the finals for the first time in like 10 years or something like that. So I'm super happy. My wife and I have been watching the games.
It's been a while.
As we record this, Boston is up 2-1 with a game to play tonight. They could round it out right before this episode drops on game 5 if they win out the rest of the games. But my guess is how the games have gone back and forth, this is probably going 7 games. So they should finish.
But as a fan, that's good, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, as long as
you see more play.
As long as it ends with Boston winning, that's all I care about. So I'm very happy for them. Last thing I want to be looking forward to, and it's, I made a mistake when I was prepping the sheet. I somehow thought this thing was coming up next week, but it's not. It's next month. The Southern Fried Gaming Expo, July 15th through the 17th.
You do need sleep.
I need a lot of sleep. Holy cow. We were just talking about it in the last segment. It's one of our favorite conventions of the year.
Oh, yeah.
This year, sadly, for some, we're not doing a table. We are doing panels, which is really nice. I think, John, you even said we just got invited to a third panel.
To a third panel. That's right. Yeah.
Some kind of after dark. I don't know why the fuck they would invite us to an after fucking dark show, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, old people go to bed early. Why would it be up that late? I don't understand.
Well, I was doing the fuck thing from the earlier part, and you didn't pick up on it.
I totally missed it.
You did fine. I got it.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure everybody heard me say fuck.
You're just trying to upset Vern again. Why? Why?
We like supporter.
But anyway, no. So Southern Fried Gaming Expo, Atlanta, Georgia, July 15th through the 17th. Looking very much forward to it. And since we're only doing panels, we'll get to spend a lot more time actually enjoying the convention.
You know, you said unfortunately. I see it as fortunately. We've done these tables when we were smaller and it was kind of recruitment. Well, we recruit now. People see us. We're there. Now we can partake in more of the show. You know, I'm bringing Dark Tower and I'm bringing Elixir games we talked about. And we can go to the arcade, not just between 10 and 12 when it's closing and we worked all day
and we're tired.
I look forward to spending more time hanging out with people doing things than just saying, hey, we're at the show and stop by our table. So I really look forward to being able to spend more time enjoying this show with you guys.
Oh, absolutely.
It's never too early to start looking forward to it, George. So you're
fair enough. Yeah. What about you, John? What are you looking forward to?
The first is a movie coming up. I wasn't sure how I felt about it, but I kind of think I am looking forward to seeing that. The pseudo spinoff from Toy Story, Lightyear, based on the
I think that looks
the
fun.
Man that the the Buzz Lightyear's toy was named after or built after. It was inspired by a real guy. And this the story of him. It looks interesting. You know, it's a Pixar Disney thing. Comes out June 17th, the day after this podcast releases. Of course, the way, you know, movies come out, you probably could see it 4 days ago. But yeah, the official release, June 17th. The next thing I'm looking forward to is something I hope all of us can pick up because I think it would make a great live stream. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Shredder's Revenge is a new video game that is based largely on the classic arcade game, the TMNT game. It's a four-player side-scrolling beat-em-up brawl, but a modern one.
Hmm.
Yeah, it looks really good. And so the thing is, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's coming out June 16th. They've not officially announced a date. They just say summer 2022, but there have been some rumblings and some leaked tweets that people mentioned it in with a group of other games that it sounds like it's coming out right here in mid-June. If so, I'm looking forward to playing it and picking it up. If not, I'm looking forward to playing it whenever the hell it comes out. But it looks like something that would be fun to play and fun to play together with you guys and maybe as a live stream. So we'll try to hook that up and make it happen. And the last thing I'm looking forward to isn't new at all. And it's actually a show that has ended, but because it comes from New Zealand, it's just hitting season 3 in North America. Did you know there was a series called Wellington Paranormal that was a spinoff from What We Do in the Shadows, the vampire show?
No.
No.
Yeah.
What?
If you think back to the original What We Do in the Shadows, there were a couple of cops that showed up and looked around to find out who was dead in the basement because kids disappeared.
Right, right.
Those two New Zealand cops are kind of like the impromptu X-Files investigators for all of New Zealand. And they have a spinoff called Wellington Paranormal that's about those two cops from the first film that go out investigating vampires and ghosts and UFOs and things like that, comedically. It actually went 4 seasons, but the 3rd and 4th season have not yet hit North America. The 3rd season, though, is going to be available on HBO Max starting in June 22nd, and the 4th season's coming close up behind it. It ended after 4 seasons. They're short seasons, 5 or 6 episodes, I think, but it's a lot of fun. And if you enjoy what we do in the shadows, this is one you should check out. So looking forward to that stuff. Mo, what about you? What do you got coming up?
Well, let's see. This is a movie coming out on the 24th of June called Black Phone.
Oh, and yeah.
The only reason why I'm kind of looking forward to it, well, one of the reasons is this has been the preview for every movie I've seen for like 6 months. You know?
Just glad to stop watching the preview.
Yeah, exactly. But actually, it has intrigued me. I mean, the whole concept, the trailer intrigues me. I'm hoping it's not the whole movie. But yeah, mm-hmm. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that. I'm really looking forward to watching the new season for All Mankind that just started.
Mm-hmm.
Love that show. It's been a long time between season 2 and 3. So I'm kind of curious to see where that show is going. But I don't know if you guys watch it, but basically it's kind of that alternate history where Russia beats us to the moon and what happens after that.
That's right. Yeah, we
so
talked
I
about it.
I really love that one. And then the last thing is, with some trepidation, I'm looking forward to Jurassic World Dominion. It's actually coming out right now as we're recording it. It's coming out today. Mm-hmm. And it's either going to be horrible or okay. I'm not going to say it's going to be great. It's going to be horrible or okay.
So no chance of great, horrible or okay. That's the spectrum.
I don't think there's a chance for great. And the only thing that I think that'll make it okay is the fact that they brought back a lot of the old characters, which I kind of like that. I think that that's a fun thing to see.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm not expecting it to be an amazing movie, but I'm hoping it's a fun movie.
I've seen some early reviews. I think it's going to be on the lower end of your scale.
Okay. That's okay. Manage expectations. That's what I'm expecting it to be.
This is where George is happy he doesn't have the A-list anymore. He's not obligated to go and get his money's worth by watching Jurassic World. Yeah. All right. Hey, a lot on the horizon and some stuff we're teasing deep too. I like you, George. Looking forward to SFGE. Before we get out of this episode, I want to take just a second to thank a brand new financial supporter over on Patreon. Tom J just jumped in, showed his support. He's flying the Gen X Grown Up banner at that $3 level.
Nice.
I wrote him and I said, hey, Tom, thank you so much for joining. How did you find out about us? What made you want to become a patron? And he wrote back briefly. He said, I was researching Gen X on YouTube and came across your 2 videos, the 10 things I learned growing up as a Gen X. Top 5 and top 5 more, right? At 10 things.
Uh-huh.
He said, then I came over to your podcast and I've been listening ever since.
Nice.
Your team just has a bunch of positive energy and incredibly funny interactions. In today's world, we kind of need that. He says, tell George and Mo to keep the laughs coming. So George, Mo, keep the laughs coming.
We'll
help Tom
best.
Out. Thank you, Tom. We so much appreciate that you decided to join us. We appreciate you and everyone who's chosen to support us, whether it be there on Patreon, over on YouTube by clicking that join button or that new little thanks button. You can thank anywhere on a video to show your appreciation. We love it, and it truly keeps gas in the tank. That is going to wrap it up for this edition of the Gen X Grown Up Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks, of course, with a regular edition of the show. But next week is our backtrack. We pick a single nostalgic topic and dig in deep. It's summertime, and that means a lot of kids are getting out of school. They're going to be spending their time doing non-academic stuff. And it got us to thinking things were quite a bit different how we spent our summers growing up as Generation Xers. So in the next backtrack, we're going to dive into all the toys and play and how we spent our summer in an era that was very different for kids. On the heels of that autonomy we did not long ago, it should be a lot of fun to talk about. We hope you'll join us for that one. It should be a great time. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you, man.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you, though, we all appreciate most of all. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Yeah, Maverick is an obvious thing to talk about. I think that's order's fine.
I'll get to see it whenever it drops.
What's that, Maverick? Did you not go see it?
No, I don't have A-list anymore.
It's you don't need it. This is a full price movie.
So the reason why I don't have A-list is because I can't afford that price.
You can't afford the price.
I can't go to this movie.
I'm Bruce Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.